Mazer streaks away, power flying.
And welcome to yet another edition of the Parrot Podcast. We did miss a week, but we're back this week. Skeleton staff this week, just joined by Birdie.
Hey, how's it going, everyone?
And I am your host, Ham. We've got to start with the NRL. Parramatta, unfortunately, once again, second week in a row. What, three losses in the past 4 weeks, I think it is. Going down to the Manly Seagulls, 32-18. We all watched it. We all saw it. We don't need to know the scorers. Birdie, what do you reckon? What are your thoughts?
Look, we can't kick a goal to save our life. You know, I think that's the most obvious one. Like, I don't know. Like, I get Gutherson's the backup, but this guy, you know, and we're going to talk about Gutherson later on, but he's, you know, it's just... I'm not saying it cost us the game, but we missed all our conversions except for the penalty goal. So, you know, it's a bit closer if we, you know, nail a couple of them. But all I can say is, like, Sivo was brought in. Not too sure why. I don't watch reserve grade, so I don't know if he's killing in reserve grade when he was down there. But I get he can finish tries because he's a bigger, he's a natural scorer. But in defense, he's just a liability. He's legit. We're better off defending without him, you know. So. it doesn't help at all. We had two people simp in the second half. Uncharacteristics, but ill discipline just cost us in the end. Like in the second half, Manly was squeaky clean. Hard to believe at Brookvale, but yeah, like I think what was more like crushing was Nathan Brown was literally owning us. This is a washed up has been who comes off the bench and gives you 10-15 minutes, and he's running hard and, you know, setting up line breaks and tries, and we just didn't seem interested in defending, so yeah, I'm not broken, I'm just shattered that we lost to them after we're leading, you know. So yeah, I don't know, man, I don't know what more we can say. Sivo's an idiot, but I'm sure half the fan base knew that. He doesn't deserve a chat anymore, not chat, sorry, he doesn't deserve a chant anymore. So yeah, I don't advocate booing for a player, but Sivo ain't making it easy for us, you know, so there.
I think you touched on all the main points there, Birdie. Goal kicking, obviously, a problem, and especially, you know, all our tries scored out wide. You know, they're tough enough as a first choice kicker. A backup kicker is going to have even more difficulties there. As you said, just soft. Brownie come in to play. It was a couple of weeks back. Actually, it was the opposing game when we played Manly at home. I thought our bench... changed the game in our favour. You had Junior and Madison there coming on and really enforcing themselves, whereas Nathan Brown just, yeah, tore us to shreds, had that opening kickoff. I don't know if it was a penalty or not. I thought Parramatta was locked in there. But putting Jake Trbojevic through a gap, seriously, you know, bloody hell. How did he make a line break? He hasn't made a tackle break, but he's made a line break, Jake Trbojevic, and it was against us. And then your big one there, Mike Asivo. When he was dropped the first time, I think I said on the podcast, I never want to see him in an Eels jersey again. And, you know, this game, you could say, was a net neutral for Asivo. He had three tries scored and three tries directly involved from his stupidity, from his... not being athletic enough. Like, that first one that he let in, where he does a star jump in the defensive line to go for an intercept. I don't know if he watches the games or not, but when players go for an intercept or take an intercept and run the length, they're not doing star jumps up in the line. They don't jump up to get the ball. They're ground and they read it properly and catch it and run. He's doing star jumps, not a fan. And then he scored three tries and defused a crossfield kick. But his best moment in the game was completely ruined by those two elbows to the head. That is so dumb. It's so dumb. I don't. You made a great tackle, a great forceful tackle, and then you fuck it up, and you've just fucked the team.
Oh wow, we're going full.
As you said, I'm in the same boat. I don't advocate for booing players. I don't think that's right. Because they're so much in the public eye that, you know, I make a mistake at work, I get chewed out by my boss, no one boos me. Right? These guys are in the public eye. Yes, they are, but they'll get chewed out by the coach, chewed out by their teammates, but, like, it's not up to me to boo. Like, that's not part of it. But I don't use this word lightly. I do not use this word lightly. I hate the fact that Mike Acevo is in a Parramatta jersey. I hate it. I hate it. Because he could be the most destructive winger in the game. No one finishes like Acevo can and does. Nobody. What winger is the size of him? None. It all comes down to effort. It all comes down to attitude. And you see, it's the easiest game plan when Mike Acevo's in the team. Kick behind him, he jogs back, and then Parramatta get dominated on tackle 1, 2, and 3. I don't know how the coaching staff, or why the coaching staff brought him back in. I understand you might have had to make changes following that Dolphins loss, but fuck me, Mike Acevo's not it. We need to find a buyer. Because we can't have him and his overinflated salary on the salary cap for 2.5 more years. We can't do it. We just can't.
I think the biggest sort of red flag is you look at Super League, right? They're crying for talent. And yet, I don't know, maybe they haven't come knocking for him. But Siva will thrive over there. Look at, you know, Bevan French. I'm not saying Bevan French is a bad player. Bevan French was talented. He goes over there, he wins the Man of Steel award, whatever it's called. Like, you know, Abbas Miski's doing well over there. Like, he could be killing it over there where they don't really care about defense. It's just about scoring tries. And the fact is not one club is pushing hard for him. Like, they came for Opacic instead. I don't get it. Like, why not? They just, maybe he's just pushed back. I don't want to leave Australia. But I just, you know, you touched on it. I feel as though he takes the easy option out in defense. That explains why would you jump or star jump for going for an intercept. He has to learn. You got to use your brain. Do I come in? Do I stay on my man? And he just wants to make it easier. I'm just going to go all in. He's going all in every single time. I don't care what's going to happen. I'm going to hit him. Either I'm going to hit him late. I'm going to collect him like on time or whatever, perfect. Or I'm going to look like an idiot. He has one option. That's it. I feel as though he looks for the easiest option out. He doesn't run hard. Doesn't ruck out hard. Even though he's built like, you know, like a back rower. It's just looking for the easiest option out there, and that's just a poor attitude. I don't know what's worse, Brad Arthur bringing him back, or the management giving him a 2-year extension or 3-year extension. So,
this is how bad he's rucking out his birdie. Excuse me. Mike Acevo made 9 runs for 88 metres. Pretty good. Nearly 10 metres a carry, right? Post contact metres, he made 8. So, he's obviously getting tackled and either pushed back. Or getting tackled and stopping. The only players that had the same or less post-contact meters were Ethan Sanders on debut as a half and Joey Lussick, who made 1 run. They were the only players across the... Brendan Hands, 3 runs, 9 post-contact meters. That is how soft Sivo is. That is how soft he is.
And then you look at Bailey Simonson, he tries his hardest no matter what. He doesn't have the body, you know, body type like Silver, but you can tell he's pumping his legs every single run and he gets smashed. So, like, it's just attitude at the end of the day.
And I think it's a mindset that goes across the whole team when you have that sort of thing coming out of your back end. Because as we see with Penrith, as we see with the Roosters, the back line is so important in early carries. With the Broncos, the back line is so important for those first 3 carries. And, you know, as you said, Bailey runs hard. He tries his hardest. I think Will Benassini does. I think there's a few things that Will could adjust in his game to make it better. Morgan Harper, probably the slowest, probably one of the only players slower than Mike Acevo, and yet he's trying. I'd rather see Morgan Harper out there, barely break out of a jog, but he's trying. Mike Acevo, I don't think has tried consistently for the past 3 years.
And you've actually heard sound bites from like players saying, "Run, Mucker, run hard." Like, so if your teammates are saying it, you know, like it's an issue. But I think the worst thing that's ever happened to this club is Sivo, like, you know, end up like finishing top try scorers or whatever, getting close to it, because, you know, we talked about, as I said, we don't advocate for booing, but what did poor Jake Arthur do wrong? He didn't do it as he did a quarter, whatever the problems as Sivo is, but yet you've got knucklehead fans going out there every home game chanting Sivo, Sivo, because he scores a try. At the end of the day, it's all about defense. It's two halves, offense and defense, or, you know, attack, defend, and everyone's too fixated on like attack. Mate, just go out there and make your tackles. Don't look like an idiot. Don't be a liability in defense. I'm not saying you're going to stop every single try, but at least make an attempt. It's not. And at the end of the day, I feel as though Siva's the type of person, and I don't know him personally, but I get the vibe that if he doesn't score a try, he'll get upset or he'll think you have a bad game. You don't have to score a try to have a bad game. Look what Toto's doing over in Penrith. He hasn't topped the try scoring list at all, but he tries his hardest. He helps contribute to the win. And Siva probably has to think he doesn't have to score a try to help contribute to this team to win the game. Sometimes you just got to make your tackles and help and bounce out of territory. But
yep. And I think it points to a larger problem that has been brewing for many years. You know, I said the coaching staff were wrong to bring him in, but who are they picking from that reserve grade team? They've obviously marked that Zach Sini's to never play first grade. Otherwise, I think he could have had a crack by now. And then you pick an Isaac Lumi-Lumi. Sean Russell obviously got dropped. The other one's Sam Luizu and Jake Tungo. You're not picking any of those players. You know, you might have Russell and Micah on the same sort of pecking order. Maybe after this week, Sivo's dropped down. But you just... Who did the coaching staff pick? Who are they meant to be picking in this instance? I understand that Richard Pennicini and Arthur Miller-Stephen both got injured with an ACL, but those two aren't... They wouldn't be an option. They wouldn't be ones that can come in and play solidly.
They are to solid me, 2 to 3 years away from playing first grade and be dependent on it. And if we have to rely on them... Now, if we have to rely on them to help put pressure on Mike Acevo, then we're screwed. Because I get development, it's a big part of the game, but they're just kids. You know, they're coming out of reserve... not reserve grade. Jersey Flag, SG Ball, like... You know, AMS has only played two games, one game. So, it's... Look, Sivo is a big... I'm not saying Sivo's a big problem with the club. Our development is a massive problem with the club. But Sivo is, like, literally... Like, he's, like, the last straw I have of this club. I
think he's the... A symptom of the problem, not the problem itself. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because giving him a elongated deal was, you know, he's coming into his early 30s. That's about the time that players, you know, particularly wingers, I think wingers and centres, unless they're absolutely elite, your Brett Morris's, you know, I know he's on the gear, but allegedly, Michael Jennings, Blake Ferguson, even to his later career, unless they're those absolute elite talents, wingers and centres, it's a young man's game. It's a young man's position. They've got to be, you know, we've signed Zach Lomax. He'll be 25, 29 by the end of his contract. Unless he's moving a fullback, you probably don't re-sign him. Because even he, like, I think he's a fantastic talent. I think he's hard-working from what I've seen. He's not an elite talent at this point. He's not an elite talent. He hasn't played Origin. He hasn't played for Australia. You know, he's a very good player, and he could make it. But at this point, after that four-year deal, unless he's going to fullback, you're probably not re-signing him. I want to talk positive now, Bertie. You know, I want to talk positives. The debut of Ethan Sanders might be a little bit of a bittersweet pill with... big rumours that he's signing with Canberra. Again, it comes down to the recruitment and retention committee there. I don't for one second... I did try and excuse them by saying that they had Dylan Brown, Mitchell Moses signed up. But now we're to see where he's going and some other clubs that I've seen. Why weren't we able to offer Ethan Sanders a 1 or 2 year deal? It doesn't make sense to me. He's going to the Canberra Raiders, who have Ethan Strange and Jamal Fogarty. I believe Jamal Fogarty is signed up until the end of... signed up, coinciding with Ethan Sanders' contract. And I look at the Melbourne Storm. The New South Wales under-19s, Jonah Pezzett, the year before Ethan played, he signed up, and they have Cameron Munster and Jerome Hughes signed up long-term. So if those clubs can sign these players and take them away from their local area, if Canberra can take away Ethan Sanders, who played for the Hills Bulls, a local junior, away and give him the same role in the top 30, then what are we doing? What's the recruitment doing? You know, I did not mean to get so bitter there, but I've made enough excuses for the recruitment and retention committee. That's poor, because he's going to play the exact same role. He's going to play in the exact same position. Why could not he have signed a 1 to 2 year deal with the Eels?
Look, it's hard. I think you can look at it like who they're managed by. You know, Pesce's from managed by a Bray Finasta. Maybe this manager just wanted to, I don't know what the deal he signed with Raiders. I don't know what the value is, but essentially he'll be doing the exact same thing here, but over in Canberra. And maybe he's getting more money. Maybe that's the difference, but I don't know, like, he's got all his mates here, you know, like, he's part of the system, why jump, so who knows, like, it's a strange one by him. He might be regretting it now, to a degree, but it's interesting, because, like, you'd think, like, the Bulldogs, wouldn't they go after him? They need a halfback. At least he walked straight into their starting lineup, so I'm not too sure why, out of all the teams, the Raiders. You know, they've got people ahead of him. They've got roadblocks ahead of him. So
I know that you know, this decision was probably made last year before the emergence of Ethan Strange and the re-signing of Jamal Fogarty and a few other things. I wouldn't be surprised if Penrith reached out to him. Honestly, he's left-side player. He's a left-foot kicker. Put him on the other side of Nathan Cleary. Jeez, he'd be a good player out there. You know, maybe it's lucky that he's going to Penrith.
I was
going
to say, would you rather him go to Canberra or Penrith?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. I think, yeah, I'd probably prefer him to go to Canberra, because I don't want Penrith to keep winning. That's for certain.
Talk about his game. Like, he's not afraid to take a run, and... He's got talent there. He's got the foundations to be a great halfback. He's got decent size. Like, he's not like a minuscule frame wise, but it's gonna hurt. But in saying that, you know, our halfbacks are in their prime at the moment. Dylan Brown, you know, he's only 23, 24. Like, he's got plenty years ahead of him. You know, it was a gamble, and I'm comfortable with the club the way they made it. They may have made an offer to him, and you know, he left for other reasons, but I wonder if Ethan Sanders is actually excited about going, or he's kind of like regrets, and if he had his time again, he would probably stay, but yeah, I don't know, man. Like, is there any other positives to this game? Probably, like...
I thought that his halves partner, Dylan Brown, probably... I know a lot of people saying it's time for Dylan to show all this sort of stuff, but I'm not sure what more Dylan could do at this point. He's maybe take the line on just a little bit more. He was absolutely killing them with his running game. But at the same time, like, I think he's probably given a little bit too much responsibility with the kicking. You can see him, he's sort of hesitant to run on the fourth tackle, whereas when Moses is in the team, he doesn't mind running on the fourth and taking the tackle. So maybe taking the line a little bit more, but 14 runs, 153 metres. Like, if that's a criticism of him, then bloody hell, he's doing well. And to me, he's one of the best halves in the game. He's just not being backed up by his forwards and by other players in the team.
Yeah, look, I get that. He's hesitant on, like, getting tackled on fourth, because he knows there's no one going to be there to kick it. Maybe going forward with Ethan Sanders, next game that could change. But yeah, look, I don't know what else we can say. Maybe Gutherson, you know, we're going to talk about him soon, but like he tried his hardest as always. There's yeah. not a bad thing we can say about him.
I feel so sorry for Guthrie. He looked like he was about to burst into tears when he was speaking about Mike Acevo and that sin bin. We'll leave it on Gutho, leave it on a high point. I love the King. I think he's all heart. I hope we, you know, as you said, we're going to talk about him later, but I hope we can find a position for him at the club. I think he's a fantastic ambassador. You never hear a bad word off him off the field. He's a winner. If it's an ambassador role, if it's a coaching role, I wonder if he'd take it, bring up through the juniors. It's coaching the Harold Matts or the SG Ball or something like that. Anyway, move on to something more positive. The Eels jersey flag finally have their first win against Manly, 26-16, 5-3. I'm going to guess you weren't out there, Birdie.
Nah. I'm not going to say yeah. You know, be like, nah, my knowledge on this is as bad as little as, as it can be.
Well, I wasn't out there either. I wasn't making the trip over to Brookvale on a Saturday for one game. No, thank you. Hard to say. I haven't seen the highlights, so I don't know how the tries were scored. But good to see the Flegg boys getting their first win for Coach Jordan Rankin. And another win, which I was out there, because this one was only at Blacktown, which is only 10 minutes down the road. Parramatta Eels, 36, defeated the Blacktown Workers Eagles, 22. Jake Tungo, Isaac Lumi-Lumi, Kelma Tuolungi, Dejan Arce, Isaac Lumi-Lumi again, Zach Senni, Sean Russell, try scorers. Best on field, probably Kelma Tuolungi, just very hard to stop. Smashed some heads in defence. That's what we want to see. I was a bit disappointed he got taken off with 15 minutes to go, I think it was. I would have liked to have seen him play the whole game because I think that's been Kelma's problem. Actually, it says here that he had 24 minutes off. I think that's Kelma's problem, is fitness and playing for an entire 80 minutes. A player that doesn't have that problem is Charlie Geimer. Started off in the middle, and then once Kelma come off, actually, he moved out to the edge. So, big game from Charlie. With the way the first grade forwards are going, I don't think he's too far away from a first grade debut. 13 runs, 100 metres, most tackles too, I think he had. I think he had about 40 or 50 tackles or something ridiculous like that. 32 tackles at 96%, so he's barely missing them. He's charging into the line. Oh, he was a little bit better at lock than previous times I've seen him there. I still think he's an edge player, but, you know, if they're going to pick him at lock, well, then they've got to stick there. Other good players, Sean Russell had a good game. And that's the thing with reserve grade. When you bring in first grade... Yeah, that's right. That's the thing with reserve grade. When you bring in first graders down, your Sean Russells, your Dejan Arsties, Luca Moretti's, Widemu Greg, Kelma Tuolungi, Makahesi Bakatoa, the fringe reserve grade guys play a lot better. I thought Zach Senni had his best game. Isaac Lumi-Lumi had his best game. Matty Arthur, I rate this kid so much. The first line break from Sean Russell come off. Good heads-up play from Matt Arthur. He recognised there was one marker. Attacked the short side. Got a great pass out to Russell, who bust downfield. Just constantly puts his body on the line. And, you know, there's a lot of talk of losing the coach. Jeez, I hope we don't lose Matt Arthur with it, because he's... For someone who's still eligible for... SG Ball, not even Jersey Flegg, SG Ball, is only turning 19 this year. Jeez, he's probably been our best hooker in reserve grade since.
How did Matt Dury go? I can see he's back, I love the kid. I want him to stay healthy, you know. He just seems to have a wretched run of injury, so he plays 65 minutes, so.
Yeah. I'm an unabashed fan of Matt Dury. I think he plays the game tough. I think he's skillful. I think he's quick. His hands really let him down in this game. He had three or four errors from memory. He had a one-on-one steal against him. Yeah, not a good day for Matt. I'm still a fan. I think hopefully that's more to do with him not being out on the field rather than, you know, because you can't excuse four errors. You can't excuse that sort of thing.
I mean, you look at Kelvin Tuilagi, his first touch in first grade was an error. Like, I feel as though we have too many people where one week it's this, one week it's that. Like, I'd love to give Matt Dury a try as opposed to Kelmer because, you know, since that Penrith game, Kelmer, like, I know Kelmer got injured that game. I don't see any positives that he brings. Like, it just seems like he's got an errant in him a lot, so.
I put a focus on Kelmer on this game in reserve grade. And, you know, it's much vaunted Brad Arthur's development of unwanted guys, in particular second rowers, Manu Ma'u, Kenny Edwards, Bryce Cartwright, and then he can go through all the other forwards that he's been a reclamation project. Isaiah Papali'i, there's a big one. I don't see Kelmer's trajectory like Isaiah Papali'i. I think we'll maybe... expecting too much. I think the trajectory for Kelmer Tuilagi is closer to Bryce Cartwright. I think Cardi's obviously got a lot more flashy skill. I think Kelmer's more of a sledgehammer second rower. But if you give him another preseason, I think he's only signed for 2 years, so give him another preseason. I think there's a first grader in there. We just got to take the time and keep developing him. I did like the fact that we did bring him down after playing first grade and pop him in the reserve grade game there. So I obviously didn't get the minutes, that's why he's playing. But yeah, I think there's a first grader there. It just needs a bit of time.
Yeah, because you look at the last 2-3 years, he was at West Tigers for a bit. He went to Manly last year. They got rid of him after a year. Like, I get it. He needs time. Like, and you know, look at Bryce Cartwright. He wasn't a success in the beginning. And the more time he spends at the club, the more years under Brad Arthur, he's getting better. So, you know, if that's the case, like, look, I don't think we have that time or, you know, the patience to wait for him to get well or to do well. But yeah, I kind of expect him to do a bit better than what he is now. But you know, if he's going to be a project, look, he could be a project player, Kelmer. But I don't think the club, like our window, I don't want to say our window, but like our time frame suits that, if that makes sense. So,
yeah. No, I get you. And, you know, with our forward pack aging, you want those guys, sort of your Budimu Greggs, your Kelmer Tuilagis, your Charlie Guymers, your Jock Brazzles. You want them to be pushing really hard for the first grade picture. And I think at the moment, probably only Charlie Guymer is really sort of knocking on the door of first grade. I think that's enough for reviews. We've been going for nearly half an hour now. You know, the ups and downs of being a Parramatta Eels fan, I guess. That's what we do it for because, you know, we're not a Melbourne Storm where we just, you know, cheat to win. We cheat to lose. So we've got some news coming out of Parramatta. And as Birdie alluded to before, we're going to talk about the King. Unfortunately, Clinton Gutherson has succumbed to his injury. It's not sustained. It's been very obvious for a couple of weeks now that Gutho has had a knee issue. He's had it drained a couple of times. And with the bye, he's undergone a knee operation and will be unavailable for 4 to 5 weeks. So that gives us 2-3 weeks, I think. Two more games without... you know, two of our top five best players. So, rest up, King. It's a tough one. It's a tough one because no one plays like Gutho, but you can just see that that knee problem's really hindering his performance at the moment.
I mean, it's getting to the point where he's getting it drained after every game. Round six had happened, he had to do something about it because you can't go through the whole season getting your knee drained, you know, risking an infection. Like, it's a massive blow. It's just how our roster's put together. We just can't deal with injuries in certain positions because we've got nothing coming through. We're very, very thin underneath and got kind of like Guffus' knee, it's cooked. So, Look, I think I honestly thought with the offseason he had had an injury, he'll be good. But I'm getting similar vibes to like with Gutherson, like Kurt Gidley at the Knights. You know, incredibly fit player. You know, he's probably lost a step or two in his pace, but he's just too valuable to let go, and we need him in the team somewhere. Don't care where you play him. He'll put his hand up to do whatever it is for this club. So I'm getting like Kurt Gidley vibes with him.
As you said there, Birdie, once again, the third strike on this podcast for the recruitment and retention team with Gutho injured. I just went through it. This is purely on the profiles on the Parramatta Eels website. We have 30 profiles up there. Gutho injured, Hayes Dunster injured, Mitchell Moses injured. They're not picking Zaxini. Who else have we got? I think that's it. Oh, Tevita Tamu-Penu is not being picked. Tony Mataeli is currently injured as well. There's six players out of those 30 profiles. They're either injured or can't be picked. So there's 24 players that we can pick from.
And we've let a few people go, release them early. So yeah, it's just
it's not good enough. Not good enough. How can you have a successful team? Mm-hmm. And build on the successes of 2022 without having a full or very close to full squad. If we had one or two players that we were down, yeah, fair enough. You can work with that. But when you've got... And this is including development guys too. So, you know, how can a coaching staff work with that? Anyway, that's the third strike on the recruitment and retention committee. Rest up, King. Get better. Once you and Mitchy come back, it'll be an undefeated romp to the grand final. Hopefully. Yeah. A little bit of late news coming in on this Wednesday afternoon. That's why we recorded today, and not because of any other reason. The Eels announced their inaugural under-14s and under-15s female academy squads. All those names are up on the Eels website. There's a few names that, a few last names that might be familiar. In particular, in the under-15s academy is Halo Talangi. So that means all three Talangi children are in the Parramatta Eels system. Good to see. If you want to know, they're up on there. I think it's a good builder on what will hopefully be a strong NRLW team. Getting the girls in earlier to have those high intensity, high performance training sessions. We'll see a much better performance in the Lisa Fiola and Tasha Gale competitions moving forward. Finally, we're on the previews for this. One preview. We've got the one game, the Parramatta Eels NRL team and reserve grade. Not going to affect New South Wales Cup team. Both have a bye, which means, Birdie, which means the Jersey Flag are the only team. Do you know where they're playing?
Is it a home game for us or an away game?
Without looking, I want you to try and guess where the Eels are playing. It's a different one. It's very different. It's an away game.
Or who are we versing?
That's the devil's in the details. Just have to pick one ground or anywhere in the world. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Well, they're not going to Questacon. What's a weird team I've heard of? Asquith Magpies, up the Maggies.
Oh.
No?
A little bit further north than that, they're playing in Churchill Park, Lotoka, Fiji. They're playing the Kaiviti Silktails here.
Wait, there's a Fijian team in the Jersey Flag?
There's a Fijian team in the Jersey Flag.
Oh, maybe we might do some bit of recruitment over there. Oh, no, we're not that good enough.
No, I couldn't imagine. I don't know if the executive team will be over there like they were over in round one. What was that? Las Vegas. I don't know if they'll be smart enough. They're trying to get some NFL... rejects rather than, you know, Fijian superstar studs. They're the one team that are below the Parramatta Eels. They haven't won a game so far this year, so the Silktails. Parramatta run out 1-18. same as last week. Zach Hunter replaced Tyler Cuthbert at fullback there. You can't change your winning team. Hopefully they go for another one. That's at 10 a.m. Saturday. Not sure if that's Fijian local time or Australian Eastern Standard Time on that one, but yeah, I would have hoped that it was on the New South Wales Rugby League TV app, like pretty much all the other Fijian games have been, but unfortunately it's not, so won't be able to see this one.
So
unless you're not taking a trip over, are you, Bertie?
No, I was going to ask, will you be at Latoka, so Churchill Park, Latoko?
Latoka? No, I won't be. I was thinking about it. I honestly was thinking about it. I thought, oh, I might have a nice holiday, spend a week over there and catch the Jersey flag, but alas, no. I
maybe
took
the
other
podcast
holidays.
Can go international and... oh, no, that doesn't sound good.
No.
Yeah, it's, you don't want to risk it. You know, sometimes this Eels club, you know, doesn't bring out the best in me, and I'd rather do it. I'd rather, you know, express my feelings and my safety of my own house.
No, I think the next overseas trip that I'll take for Parramatta is when we're playing in the 2025 World Club Challenge in St Helens over in near Liverpool there.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's the one game this week. Follow it along on the Match Centre, I guess. Other than that, I don't know, Bertie. What's...
I think NRLW signings trackings.
Oh, yes, Abbey Church. There's another one that I missed out on that. Jeez, too much news.
Too much, man. We don't deserve this much good news in our life.
Ah, bloody hell. Yeah, so Abbey Church committed to the club, I believe. Your friend and mine, Steve Georgialis, noted on the tip sheet, the Cumberland Throw podcast, that 23 or 24 players have been signed for the NRLW team, so they're just announcing them, or just yet to announce them. Currently, they have
13. I was just going to say, yeah, everyone got. That was before I knew they had 23 signed. I was going to say each one has a position, so we can field a starting team. So yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, supposedly 23 or 24 players signed, just got to be announced. And you know what, Parramatta, the fans want to keep up with this women's team. Let us make it a lot easier than what you are. How do those Cowboys draft, Bertie?
Look,
do they draft well?
I don't know. Look, it's a positive draft. We had a lot of holes to fill, but we filled them to a degree. Yeah, it was weird. Actually, I think the biggest talking point of the draft was the Falcons, who just signed Kirk Cousins to a 4-year, $100-something million deal as their new starter. They end up drafting a QB, and there was a funny meme going around. Like an image was taken of the war room, and it was the general manager explaining to the owner why they chose a QB, even though they just bought one. Other than that, it was, the Chicago Bears drafting another Packers fan in Caleb Williams. Oh, it was an Aussie who got drafted by them. And, yeah, apparently he's a beast, beast of a kicker. That's the only way we're going to have an Aussie player playing in our NFL, to be honest. Oh, yeah, I forgot about him. And you know what's funny? To be honest, I'm a Cowboys fan and he's a Philadelphia fan. I hate them. All right, so funny enough, that was the first ever time a first round pick was announced. The draft was announced, so the pick selection was announced during at Australia. They were in Melbourne actually when he announced the pick. So yeah, but the Aussie that we're talking about, Torrey Taylor, literally he's been drafted by the Bears. I think it's like the highest pick since the other Aussie, Mitch Wynowski, for the 49ers. And it's good to see the number one pick, Caleb Williams, say to him, it's okay, we won't be using him as much because we won't be punting. So, you know, I love the enthusiasm, but, yeah, this Taylor guy, as Pat McAfee, is a monster. So, yeah, other than that, nothing really happened else, man. I mean, you had the... how'd you go on the two-up on the weekend? Did you...
I don't gamble.
It's not gambling if you win all the time.
Oh, no, I refused to gamble. I was going to go back to the NFL draft, Bertie. I thought the most interesting part was the Jacksonville Jaguars, Tony Khan, having a neck brace on.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Oh, well, to be honest, I was only made aware of it, obviously, after that, but then I figured, what? And I realised he's got something to do with AEWA. Isn't he, like, the owner or something? Like,
yeah, he got pile-drived on Thursday morning over here. He got a pile-driver, and so that's why he was wearing the neck brace there. I thought that was a very funny image of...
Well, speaking of drafts, they had the WWE draft day one on Sunday. Oh, no, Saturday for SmackDown. So, would you like to talk about that one? You know, I'm not too up-to-date with...
I don't watch WWE, sorry.
Oh, you bend them, hey?
Yeah. Many years ago, I prefer wrestling rather than sports entertainment, sorry.
Ah, okay.
I don't know if that'll rattle a few cages, but...
Yeah, mate. Well, actually, I've stopped watching it since the great Daniel Vito, or whatever, Zion Quinnen, or whatever his name is.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the great Carly.
Oh, great Carly. Oh, lovely, lovely man. Big hands. You know what they say about big hands? Big gloves.
Yes, that's right. And... Yeah. We won't be talking about gloves or anybody who might have worn gloves in a previous life.
Yeah. If the glove, what's that saying? If the glove don't fit,
don't.
I saw that potential NDA.
All right, Bertie. Oh, thank you very much.
Cancelled.
Yeah, mate. Thank you very much for the chat. It's been very cathartic to get a lot of things off my chest. I hope I haven't been too much of a prick, I guess I could say.
I can't tell that you hate this retention and recruitment team. I couldn't tell.
Nah, not one bit. Anyway, I hope everyone else enjoyed that because, I'm feeling a lot better right now than I did at the start of the podcast. So,
yeah, I feel better.
And I hope you all do too. Yeah, so, you know, if you're feeling a bit angry about the retention and recruitment about Mike Acevo, well, then this was the podcast for you. And until next time... Go the Eagles, Jersey Flag Team.
Go Power.
We raise our voices too.